Judiciary Committee. Today's Friday, April the 22nd. It's now 8:43 a.m. Senator French, Senator Huggins, Senator Guest, myself, Senator Seekins, and Senator Terrio will be with us shortly. We're going to start this morning with House Bill 85, and we have the sponsor with us this morning, Representative Meyer. Welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
And if you'll put yourself on the record, we're eager to hear your testimony this morning.
Very well. For the record, my name is Kevin Meyer, representing House District 30. Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Judiciary, thank you for hearing this bill today. House Bill 83 has to do with prescribed medication for students, and it's estimated that 6.3 million children in the United States have asthma, and the number of children with asthma is increasing each year. And many of our school districts are concerned about liability and litigation, so they do not let the kids carry their inhalers with them. And I brought a little prop. It's very easy to carry these with you, or their EpiPens. And so instead of letting the kids carry the inhalers with them, they ask that they be given to the nurse. But not having immediate access to their medication can put kids at risk. Some kids have died trying to get from the playground to the nurse to get their inhaler. House Bill 85 allows the children to carry their inhaler or EpiPen if they do three things. First of all, they get the parent or guardian has to file a release with the school, a release of liability. Second is the health care provider must provide a written consent treatment plan with the school, and also certify that the child is capable of using the medication. This bill has garnered a lot of support along the way. Alaska Association of School Boards, Alaska Nurses, National Association of Nurses, School Nurses, American Academy of Pediatrics, and American Heart and Lung. And there are many reasons to support this bill. I sit on the Finance Committee. One thing that I like about it is that it now qualifies the state for federal grants under the Asthmatic School Children's Treatment Act of 2004. If we pass this law, we're eligible for grants from the federal government. 37 states have passed similar legislation. It protects the schools from liabilities, and it could potentially reduce absences. But the main reason why I'm bringing this bill forward is that it could save children lives. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that's the gist of the bill.
Questions for the sponsor? Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Statement number one, question number two. I salute Representative Meyer for bringing this forward because it's the right thing to do. And to me, I guess I'm sort of paled by the fact that in our society we are to the point of, in this case, we know asthma is a major problem in our society, yet across, I think you said 37 states, they're busy doing the same thing or have done the same thing for something that's a common difficulty, but because we're paralyzed by legal litigation sorts of things, we're micromanaging in this respect. So my question for you, though, is how are we doing the medication prior to this legislation or at this point in time?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Huggins, it would vary from school to school. A lot of schools would require all medication to be left with the school nurse. It's my understanding, though, some schools have allowed the kids to carry their inhalers with them and just took the risk of the liability and possible litigation. But a lot of schools do require all medication to be left with the nurse. And what this bill also does too, it was amended somewhere along the line, is it still allows the child to leave an inhaler with the nurse, but then also have it with them. So that way, if they do lose it, misplace it, forget it, then the nurse still has an inhaler there if they need it.
Well, I mean, finally, I say thank you for doing this. I apologize to you for the rest of our society, the fact that you have to do it.
Thank you.
Senator Guess.
Can you tell me why pharmacist is under health care provider? We We don't often see that in the definition, and they're signing off on conditions and self-medications and all that.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'd like to ask Mike Plowski to join me. This
sure.
This amendment was made in another committee.
And what up, Mike?
The reason, and Mike will help me out here, the reason why they were included was oftentimes they're the ones that are training the kids on how to use the medication.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why we had to include them. But Mike will elaborate.
Mike, welcome to the Judiciary Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for the record, my name is Michael Pawlowski, and I'm an aide for Representative Meyer. Representative Meyer's been correct in the reason the amendment was added. The concern being, and I believe that the Department of Public Health will be online today to testify as well, was that it's really the pharmacists that at the front line demonstrate and train children how to use their medication. While you would not see the pharmacist sign the form that says that there is, that the child has on page 1, line 13, the condition,
mm-hmm.
You would see them demonstrate section C, that they've demonstrated the skill level necessary to use the medication. They also wouldn't do a treatment plan, but the doctors felt and the Department of Public Health felt that it was appropriate because of the role pharmacists play in this instance for the healthcare providers.
Ms. Chair, may I continue?
Go ahead, Senator Gass.
So is there something within the licensing of the oversight of pharmacists to ensure that they're not doing written treatment plans and they're not saying that someone has asthma? Because under this law, they're allowed to say, okay, well, your doctor may not have wanted to sign off, but I'll sign off for you and do a written treatment plan.
Senator Guest, through the chair, that is my understanding, but I would prefer to defer that question to the department who handles their licenses.
Representative Meyer, a couple of questions I might have. My wife has worked as a substitute school nurse from time to time, and one of the things, and I've also raised four kids and got six grandkids, and one of the things that kids do is they forget. They forget to bring, they forget to carry, it's in the wrong bag, it's not in their pocket, and I would think that one of the things that I would feel comfortable with, I don't have any problem with the self-administration because I think kids are pretty smart, generally. They know when they need some help. But I would feel very comfortable. I notice here that on page 2, we say that the pupil shall be permitted to carry and store with the school nurse an inhaler and auto-injectable epinephrine or both at all times. I would really feel more comfortable if I'm going to address this issue to make sure that the proper inhaler or the proper injectable is available for that student, even if they forgot or if they left it in their locker in their backpack, and that if we were going to give this authority to kids to be able to help themselves and administer as they've been taught, that we also make sure that there's a standby medication on the premises. I would hate to think that we would say, well, now that we've signed off this kid, we wouldn't be concerned about whatever the circumstances are. Have you made provision for that? You follow what I'm saying? I'm a little concerned if we just say we trust the kid and then something happens and it could have been available for the nurse, but now the school is absolved of that liability, so they don't do it.
Mr. Chairman, if I understand what you're saying, I think they could still leave it one with the nurse if they wanted to, and then they could also keep one in their locker or on themselves. There's nothing prohibiting from leaving one with the nurse still, kind of as a backup.
Yeah, I just kind of hate Big Brother, but I'm almost saying if a kid can do this by themselves, there ought to be a backup somewhere.
Right. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think my understanding is that they can have a backup with the school nurse.
I'm more interested in twisting their arm to make sure there is one there than just saying, well, you can.
But Mr. Chairman, that's a good point. I think that the problem is not every kid can afford two inhalers.
I know.
They're relative, not real expensive, but they're up there.
Yeah, I know.
So I'd hate to make that a requirement that they have to have a backup. I would certainly hope that they will have a backup if they can afford it.
Interesting thing about that is that what we're doing now, if the kid only has one, is he comes in the building, he gives it to the school nurse, he picks it up on his way back out. So in some respects, unless there's already one there, I'd have to ask my wife if whether the kids leave their medications there or not sometimes. But it seems to me that there are times when kids with serious problems have medication that's left at the school all the time.
Mr. Chairman, certainly we're putting a lot of trust in our kids here by saying, you know, you can now carry these inhalers with you on the playground or wherever you go. And I think, being an asthmatic myself, I think you will do that, because it's just one of those things that you don't want to be left without. But also, like in my case, I have one in my, you know, why I have a big briefcase. I have one in my briefcase. I have one in my desk. I have one in my car. I think if kids can afford it, or the parents can afford it, they will have backups scattered all over.
I know, and that's one of the things myself. I'll have one terrible allergy. It's birch pollen. So when I go home from the session, I know I'm going to have to be very careful, and I've got backup stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
But Senator Huggins?
Our scenario question for you. I've had multiple people in my family that have asthmatic problems, but let's just say that my oldest son is on his campus, has an asthma attack on the playground. Another child doesn't have his inhaler. Nurse is present. Another child runs up and says, "Nurse, I have an inhaler." What's the answer to that question? And there's my concern, if you follow my logic. I think the answer is we can't do it because it's not his inhaler, and my oldest son dies because we're concerned about the litigation. May not be an answer to that, but that scenario concerns me.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, Senator Huggins, that could happen. I would think that the school would not be liable.
I'm not worried about the liability. I'm worried about the person dying. That's the thing that scares me about this whole proposition of the litigation mentality of, you know, we're worried about the liability of the school, but how about the life of the child? And that I say that's maybe a worst-case scenario, but it's one that's probably not unrealistic.
If I may, Senator Seekins, Chairman Seekins, Senator Huggins, one good thing about these inhalers is that I could give this to you now, and you could take a puff, and nothing's going to happen to you. You might get a little hyper.
Right,
but it's not going to kill you by any means, and I think that's one reason why they're allowing this particular medication, you know, for kids to carry themselves. Because if they do share it with another child, it's not going to.
No. Understand. The scenario. Maybe it's not a fair scenario to ask, but if my son doesn't have his inhaler, he's having an attack, and like you said, it's benign to give him a shot of somebody else's. But if we're paralyzed because of our concern of the litigation business, that we let him die because that's my concern. And maybe there's not an answer to that, but it's a scenario that comes to mind just based on my family. One more question.
Go ahead.
I notice in the last paragraph under health care provider, the list of, but I see that one of the recommendations by another organization was advanced nurse practitioner. My question for you is, what is an advanced nurse practitioner?
If I may, but yeah. Mr. Pulaski.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I am not sure. We actually just received that fax at the same time this morning. I believe advanced nurse practitioner was in an earlier version of the bill, and one of the discussions was to just go back to licensed nurse. And as I understood from the Department of Health, that encapsulated all of the variations of nurse that we wanted to include in the bill. So if I could, I'd prefer, if they're online, to defer that to the Department of Public Health.
Okay. Yeah, I saw the contrast.
Oh, I see the facts.
Been through this.
Senator French?
We just go through that on the workers' comp bill. Didn't we just learn that all nurse practitioners in Alaska are advanced nurse practitioners?
Right.
That's just the name we give them.
Yeah, but and the licensed nurse would include that universe.
Yeah, that's my...
The only difference is a licensed nurse who is not a nurse practitioner may not be able to prescribe medications. But, you know, I think in some respects, I guess Did you have a, Senator French, did you want to go?
Well, just generally, I don't even know what an EpiPen is. Can someone tell me what an EpiPen is?
Go ahead. I do.
Through the chair, Senator French, it's short for epinephrine injector, and it is, as I understand it, a metered injection that...
Self-administered injection.
Yeah. It's a needle.
It's encased. You punch it. It injects. You've got the right dose.
It sounds like it's something that's fairly unusual for someone to carry, or is it common?
Through the chair.
More common than inhalers or less common?
Through the chair, Senator French...
So I'm watching the person behind you is giving me the answers.
We carry them in all of our first aid kits. We carry them in all of our first aid kits. We carry them, you know, in my airplane. We carry them places because it, people having anaphylactic shock, you can address it quickly.
And it's one type of medicine? There aren't varieties, or is it one? It's one type of medicine.
Okay. Senator French, I think we better let
epinephrine. Epinephrine is a form of. What do you want to call it? It's a what?
Adrenaline.
It's adrenaline. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. It's adrenaline. Basically, it's there to reverse the effects of the anaphylactic shock.
Yeah.
Senator Terrio.
Quick question on page 2, line 19. When the pupil is permitted to administer the medication under the section, shall be permitted to carry and store. So can they keep the inhaler in their pocket every day at school, or they have to take it to school and leave it at the nurse's office?
Chairman, Senator Terrio, they can do both. They can carry it with them, or they can leave it with the nurse, or they can carry it with them and keep a spare one or a backup one with the nurse.
Yeah.
Well, it could be carry and store, or carry or store.
Well, you could carry and to store. That might make it easier. Carry on the person on the student's person and to store. That's what you mean. I mean, they're allowed to carry one on their person, and they're also allowed to store one at the school nurse. That's what we're trying to get to.
Okay.
We could clean that up a little bit.
Well, that caught my attention, you know, because if the kid's out at recess playing soccer, I don't want
to clean that
run
up.
In, or one of his friends have to run in to get his inhaler. Then the next section, sub D, if the student uses prescribed medication in a manner other than prescribed, what if he lets his friend take a hit? Does that mean then the inhaler's taken away?
Through the chair, if I may, Senator Terrio, the follow-up to that restriction is in lines 23 and 24, is that while discipline according to the school code would govern that situation, the disciplinary action may not limit or restrict the student's immediate access to the student's prescribed medication. So I share my inhaler with Representative Meyer because he lost his. That's using it outside of the prescribed medication standpoint. I might get detention, but that doesn't mean the school can take my inhaler.
Heck, when I was a kid, that would have meant we'd have got a swat from the principal. You know, today it means that we would get a firm reprimand and have to go to a class for sensitivity training.
I mean, thank goodness I don't have to use an inhaler, but Representative Meyer said something about I could take a puff on it, it wouldn't do anything to me, but I don't know if you said it might give me a rush or... Okay, well, I can see lots of junior high kids giving themselves a little mini rush as they're walking down the hall.
Could happen.
And if it happens over and over, what do you do? That kid says, well, I'm licensed to carry. What are you going to do to me? You can't take it away.
Through the chair, Senator Terrio, that debate happened a lot in House Judiciary, and the concern that went back and forth was that disciplinary code for the school should be adequate. There is some point where suspension, where parental conferences, where all of the tools that a school has to use can be used. But on balance, taking that child's medication away from them amounted to a sentence or a restriction that was so severe that no one was willing to go there, and that was the extent of the discussion.
Yeah, I think you can get a certain amount of these inhalers over the counter, and there doesn't seem to be a big rush of kids to go down and get inhalers over the counter to be feeling a little rush. I mean, and most of the kids that have got asthma, they understand that they need that when they need it, and they need it bad, and they're not about to to come up short when they need it by sharing it with others, I would think. But you may have some discipline there. But I would think that you'd more than likely, if you had some kind of a problem, you may have a problem somebody trying to take it away from another kid or something like that. But it's pretty serious when someone has asthma, that when they need that, they need it. But I would just think, and I'm just thinking out loud here too, that I guess when someone has a very serious ailment that could kill them, I have no problem with them carrying on their property, on school property, or being able to self-administer. I guess the only concern I have is that one that I had earlier, is that saying, you know, if it's a, and I see that concern is shared in the Alaska Nurses Association facts, which I didn't get to until just in the interim here, where they, students with asthma and other allergic conditions vary widely in the severity of their disease. It's not uncommon for students to forget their inhalers at home or to forget to check to make sure their inhalers still contain medication. For a student with mild asthma, this is not a big problem, but it can be much more serious for a student with a more severe condition. We'd like to propose that a section be included that states that the health care provider can stipulate that a student has a more serious condition and must leave an inhaler or an epinephrine pen with a school nurse in addition to carrying one of them.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I believe and hope that is included on page 2, section 5, between lines 10 and 12, that in asking the healthcare provider to provide a written treatment plan, I would assume that a doctor or a healthcare provider could already stipulate that within the bill.
He could include it in his list and the dosage of medications needed. He could say, the dosage he needs is so often, and the list he needs is two of them, one in the nurse's office and one with a student.
I believe you could infer that. It's a little vague.
Mr. Chairman, I do believe it is vague, yes.
I'm only concerned there about the safety of that child, knowing children. You know, knowing my grandkids and my kids, sometimes what they were wearing didn't have pockets in them in the first place. But, okay, other questions?
Well,
Senator Huggins?
Mr. Chair, your concern gets to the point that I talked about before of not having that person's inhaler to use, and we sit there and let the person die because of litigation. That's an extreme, but it's the same sort of scenario, and it needs to be cleaned up so that it's very specific that we have some way to address that.
And I wouldn't have any problem putting it in paragraph 5, subparagraph 5 there, a written treatment plan for the pupil for managing asthma or anaphylaxis episodes and list of dosages of medications needed during school hours is assigned by the pupil's health care provider. Something included in there, and also which may include the necessity of having additional medication available in the school nurse's office.
Mr. Chair, I think as long as we keep it as an option, I think I have the same concern that Representative Meyer does, that if a family only can afford one inhaler, or let's say one gets lost and they haven't gotten another one, then the student under this couldn't carry it all, and I don't think that's what we want to do. So I think probably the way you stated it was good, which, you know, if you want to, we want to put it in as a possibility in the treatment plan. Is that what I hear you saying, versus a requirement?
I'm talking about stockage.
Yep, stockage is what I'm looking at.
Stockage. So it's on hand. The nurse grabs it off the shelf.
And that's the only concern. That is a concern I have. I don't know about other folks.
I do. It's a good bill.
I want to pass the bill. Well, I don't want to put someone who can't afford medication in a risk either. However, I hope that the healthcare provider would take some of that into consideration as well. If I got a serious case, I don't know where it would be, but I guess I would want to think that, not just from a liability standpoint, I'm with you, Senator Huggins.
Yeah.
I'm worried about the kid as well. So where would we want to do? What would we want to do on something like that? Let's listen to the public testimony, and then we'll discuss that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Meyer.
The questions you asked us will be answered by the
right
people who deal with this on a daily basis.
We do appreciate your being here, and we'll get this thing moving as fast as we can here. We have Patricia Center online in Anchorage. Ms. Center, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
If you'll put your name on the record, we're eager to hear your testimony this morning.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name is Patricia Center. I'm a family nurse practitioner. I'm chair of the Alaska Nurses Association Legislative Committee. I'm a mother of three sons with asthma, and I'm also the nurse practitioner for Covenant House Alaska, which is a program for homeless teenagers, so I'm familiar with this problem from many different angles. I've appreciated your discussion this morning, and someone has already read from my testimony. First of all, I wanted to bring out that I did talk before the session started. The Lung Association had given us a draft of this bill, and we emailed it throughout the state to nurses, and they were all in favor of the bill, except the school nurses came back that the problem you were just discussing is a real problem they are experiencing. They are having trouble with kids. You know, kids don't realize their inhaler is out, or they don't tell their parents that their inhaler is out, and so they get to school, and they may have one on them, but it doesn't have any medication in it, or they forget the inhaler themselves. And that's how I brought out my testimony. For children like my children that have mostly exercise-induced asthma, that's no big problem. But I would suggest, as was recommended, that under that Section 5, you stipulate that the healthcare provider could say that what is a backup is needed in the school. And if the school nurse feels that this is a problem with a particular student, then she could notify the healthcare provider and they could modify the plan. Inhalers, you know, medications are outrageously expensive these days. But albuterol, which is the rapid acting medication that we're most talking about here, it is relatively, it's about $20 an inhaler. Versus I bought a steroid inhaler for a kid at Covenant House the other day, and it was $100. So it's easier to have a backup than some of the other medications we're interested in. I was more concerned about the practicality of letting kids have EpiPens on them. And the school nurses here in Anchorage say they do have a large number of students carrying EpiPens on them, and they have not had trouble with abuse of this. They do occasionally encounter kids loaning their albuterol inhalers to other students, but as was mentioned earlier, the side effects of albuterol are minimal unless you have a heart condition. So from a practical sense, the Anchorage School District has been our trial, and other school districts, I'm sure, as well, and they say there hasn't been a problem. I think that is, bodes well for this. There are, by the way, two doses of EpiPens. One is Epi Junior, and the other is for adult. And I think the adult version kicks in at about 70 pounds, is my memory on it. So the Anchorage School District, these school nurses have one EpiPen, and maybe in the grade schools they have two because of the weight changes. So they do have a backup of that particular medicine. I don't think they have a backup of the albuterol. The Nurses Association, we have problems with the definition of healthcare provider, and unfortunately none of the school districts are here, but it has to do with who has authority to diagnose and prescribe. And as was mentioned under Section 2, the healthcare provider needs to state that the child has asthma or a condition that may lead to anaphylaxis, which also would include severe allergies to things like nuts, which is very common. Implied in this is a personal knowledge of the child. The problem with adding pharmacists is that they usually don't have a personal knowledge of the child. And they don't know the behavioral issues involved with the child. You know, do they have your ADHD, and so it's not safe for them to have an inhaler or whatever else might be going on. Because of this, we would suggest that you change the description of healthcare provider to include those people that have currently under Alaska statute have legal authority to diagnose and treat. And that includes physicians and advanced nurse practitioners, who are all the nurse practitioners, the nurse midwives, and the nurse anesthetists, and all of those groups of people have authority to diagnose and prescribe. And physician's assistants, and then we added village health aides who have delegated prescriptive and diagnostic authority through the native health care system. We would suggest leaving out the licensed nurse if we're going to go this route, because regular registered nurses do not have authority to diagnose and treat, and leave out the pharmacist. So I'm open to any other questions you might have.
Questions? Senator French?
Good morning, Pat. My question is about the I just don't know anything about this. No one in my family has asthma, and so I just am behind the curve as far as most of the common knowledge goes on this subject. The inhalers, do they all have the same active ingredient? Is it all albuterol for the most part, except for the steroid ones you were referring to?
No, there are actually several. The most common one that we're talking about, what we call a rescue inhaler, those are all albuterol. That's the only fast-acting inhalers. There are a variety of bronchodilators and steroid mixes, and most of the other inhalers that we're talking about are not rapid-acting, so if a child had an emergency episode, they would not be helpful. They're helpful for controlling the disease. They are not helpful in an emergency situation.
And what kinds work in the emergency situation?
That would only be the albuterol at present.
And when kids take their asthma inhalers to school, are they taking asthma inhalers for sort of the for use in normal medication, or are they taking them for emergencies?
Both the albuterol is often taken 4 times a day, so in fact a child may have that on them for a noontime dose. Most of the other inhalers that we have are twice-a-day medications, so the kid would take that before leaving in the morning and in the evening. So that, as far as I can think, I'm looking at the Lung Association people here, they're nodding with me. Those albuterol would be the main one that the child would carry on.
And if the school were to maintain an emergency inhaler for those odd instances where there isn't one around or the child's is empty and so forth, they would also probably select an albuterol inhaler.
That would be correct.
Is there any danger, if someone were in an emergency situation, is there any danger from using someone else's inhaler?
Well, the main danger would be if the other person had a contagious disease and somehow they had left, because...
The propose that... We amend this bill on line 19 that after the word permitted to, we would insert personally, and after the word, following word and, the word to. And after with the word nurse or other designated school official, so that this section would now read, a pupil who is permitted to self-administer medication under this section shall be permitted to personally carry and to store with the school nurse or other school designated school official an inhaler or auto-injectable epinephrine, or both at all times. Senator French?
Just one suggestion to your amendment. I agree with it. I just think the word personally is superfluous. I think.
I understand that. I guess it's, and you're probably true.
Just trying to save a couple of inches.
Senator Terrio normally does that. You're stepping into his shoes there, Senator Frank.
Frightening.
We move it somewhat conceptually. The drafter will have the power to strike out any language he sees.
Is there objection to that amendment number one? Sponsor okay with that?
Mr. Chairman, the sponsor would support that.
Amendment number one is adopted. Now, the chair would also propose an amendment on line 25 and 26 to state, in this section, health care provider means a person with prescriptive authority in this state.
Mr. Chair, I'll object for discussion purposes. Could I have someone clarify whether or not a village health aide would still fall under that?
A village health aide, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to suggest that if the Department of Public Health is still online, they might be able to answer that question.
Stephanie, are you still there?
I am, Senator. Yes, I think that they probably would because they have delegated prescriptive authority. Another suggestion, if I might, be to keep the section as it is, but add the wording on line 26 within their state regulations. It would then allow for them to basically practice within their occupational licensing regulations. And then you wouldn't necessarily have to get into the debate as to whether or not the prescriptive authority is referring back to those that are listed there.
Because what we're doing here, actually, we're only referring to health care provider in two places in the bill that I can see. The first place that I see it is in on the first page on line 11. Written certification from the pupil's health care provider that the pupil has asthma, et cetera, et cetera. So that's someone has received instruction in the proper method of administration of medication and has demonstrated to the health care provider the skill level to necessary to use the medication. Now, as I see the current definition, I don't have a problem with that because what it says to me is, first of all, that someone with prescriptive authority has written a prescription for the medication. So there has been a diagnosis and there has been a treatment plan that has been determined by the person with that prescriptive authority. Now, the next step, and all I think that we're doing here, is we're saying that the school needs to have someone of some authority certify that the pupil has asthma and has received instruction in the proper care and administration and has demonstrated that they can do that. So I think we're kind of getting into the argument here of, a pharmacist doesn't have the ability to know the child, but certainly the pharmacist, in order to have filled the prescription, has to know that the child has gone through a diagnostic care, a diagnostic process, that there has been a course of treatment which has been prescribed, which includes a prescriptive medication, and that the pharmacist, even though it may be different types of inhalers, I believe there are different types of inhalers that are available. And the pharmacist might be the one who's best capable of showing the child or demonstrating to the child how to use that particular device. But, you know, so we're not getting into the treatment here. We're just saying someone has to certify to the school that, yes, this person has been diagnosed, yes, there is a device that is necessary for the treatment of that, and that the child has received the instruction, necessary instruction on how to use it. Not We're not trying to certify anywhere that this child has, we're not trying to get into the, that a pharmacist is all of a sudden a diagnostician. He is a technician, he or she. So I'm having some problems, but I think we're getting into, rather than getting into the mechanics of the process, we're getting into turf discussions. And I'm willing to accommodate that to a degree, but being careful not to go too far. Hello, Senator French.
Mr. Chairman, as I listened to you make your remarks, I thought I heard you kind of work all the way around the problem and come back to the place where the bill is, which is it's probably pretty reasonable.
That's kind of where I am, too, but I'm just trying to accommodate, and you're right.
If I may, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I believe the department's suggestion is appropriate because the implicit nature of the argument that's being made is that somehow a pharmacist or a licensed nurse or any health care provider will somehow do something outside of what their regulatory authority is. And that's saying that the pharmacist might try and do the prescription or say something that they don't have the ability to do. So the department's suggestion to add on to the end under the regulations of the state could perhaps, I think, limit it to their license.
It could. But I wouldn't want to say that a pharmacist could not certify that the kid doesn't know how to use the device. So, Senator Guess? Did I totally confuse you with my circular non sequiturs?
I'll plead the fifth.
I didn't say they were non sequitur. I thought it was a good analysis of them.
I guess my concern looking at this is under 2 on page 1, there's A, B, and C, and it seems like the pharmacist plays a role in B and C, but not in A. And under number 5 on page 2 on line 10, the pharmacist or even the licensed nurse doesn't really have a role in that, but we're defining health care provider as kind of a catch-all instead of being a little bit more specific.
I think we could say health care provider means a licensed physician, licensed nurse, physician assistant, village health aide, or pharmacist practicing within the scope of their authority. How's that?
Mr. Chairman, I believe the sponsor would support that.
How about the committee? How about anybody else that's interested? Is there objection from anybody? Hearing none, we're going to propose amendment number 2, is it? 3.
I think we were on an amendment that I objected to for.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, where are we, Madam Clerk?
Are you withdrawing your amendment?
I'll withdraw amendment number 2.
And
we'll amendment number 3 would that would say in this section health care provider means a licensed physician, licensed nurse, physician assistant, village health aide, or pharmacist acting within the scope of their authority period. Is there objection? Hearing none, amendment number 3 is adopted. Okay. Where are our other concerns and comments on the bill? Members, have we addressed Charlie Huggins, Senator Huggins?
Yes, on line 10 and 11, as the sponsor, we talked conceptually about a change there would allow some sort of on-hand. Could you restate that for us, please, Michael?
Thank you, Senator Huggins, through the chair. I believe the conversation we had was a written treatment plan, and I'm reading off of line 10 right now, a written treatment plan for the pupil for managing asthma or anaphylaxis episodes, comma, deleting and inserting a comma, a list and dosage of medications, comma, and any requirement for the stockage of the medication. We were conceptually speaking along those lines, inserting a permissive requirement that if the healthcare provider feels it's appropriate, medication must be kept with a school nurse or designated official.
Is that your amendment, Senator?
It is. I so move.
Amendment number 4. Would you restate the amendment for us?
Conceptually, amendment number 4, Mr. Chairman, is to delete the word "and" on line 11, insert a comma following the word "episodes," insert a comma following the word "medications," and insert "and any requirement for the," if I may I state it permissively?
Sure.
"A permissive requirement that medication, that the prescribed medication be kept with a designated school official."
Drafter. Okay. Well, why don't we adopt this conceptually? We'll let the drafters make sure that it's consistent.
Good idea.
Is there objection to adopting this amendment conceptually? Hearing none, amendment number 4 is adopted. Other concerns? Hearing none. Senator Guest.
Mr. Chair, may I ask the sponsor, school and the definition of school? I think we had talked off the record about private versus public and whether or not we needed to clarify public, since we don't regulate private schools.
Senator Guest, through the chair, there was a legal memo included in your packet dated April 6, 2005 from Jean Michel in Legislative Legal Department. There is a concern that the word "school" is not specific enough. There are police powers. It's very problematic for the state to require a private school to do anything, and it's limited under AS 1445-100, the ability of the state to require a private school to follow specific guidelines. Nothing in the bill prohibits a private school from following a similar series of steps and receiving the same benefit, but they can do that already under current law. Without House Bill 85, much as the Anchorage School District can do now, so can a private school. What the sponsor, and I believe we've offered an amendment to the chairman, is to insert the word "public" to just make it very clear that in the bill we are speaking to public schools and not getting into a jurisdictional dispute between public and private schools.
Senator Guest, does that answer your question?
Yes. Do we have an amendment, or should I offer a conceptual amendment, Mr. Chair?
Do we have that in writing? I've got it here somewhere. Just one moment. We'll address your question. Mr. Hove? I have before you what we'll title amendment number 5 for consideration. And the chair will move this amendment.
I'll object. Question, just a question. By specifically excluding private schools in this language, have we tipped the balance so that if a private school meets all these criteria, they will not get the same kind of level of protection?
Through the chair, Senator Terrio, my conversations with legal indicate that that would not be the case. The reason is that this piece of legislation is a requirement too. The processes that are laid out can provide a template for a private school to follow if they wish. They may also develop a set of procedures that is more appropriate for their school. But as I understand from legal, it does not tip the balance. It just clarifies that in the event that this is challenged under police powers, the dispute doesn't go anywhere.
Mr. Chairman, I remove my objection.
Does this require a title change?
Yes.
Through the chair, Mr. Chairman, as I understand, it is a clerical title change.
Clerical title change would not
require,
subject to the, not require us to have a resolution. Senator Terrio, do you know?
I'd have to check on that.
You're the senior member.
That's one I'd go to the attorneys on.
Okay. We'll make sure. If it requires a title change, is there any objection to that? We'll put together. Okay, Senator Huggins?
Yeah, I too object, but under another concern, in that rather than us inserting "public" across every statute. I would hope that someplace that it state that we would state that we're addressing public schools overall in Alaska statutes. If that's in case, if we have no authority over the private schools, rather than every statute restating public when we say school, that it's just like the definition of provider.
And I see what you're saying, and I thought about that a little bit too, and I thought maybe in the end maybe we might, and I don't know here again.
For the purposes of this statute, I don't have a problem with it, but I think in a larger omnibus approach.
I agree.
So I remove my objections for the purpose of this statute.
Mr. Chair.
Senator, yes.
Maybe we could hear from the sponsor. I had the same concern. I assumed that since Jean Michelle wrote the amendment, that she decided to do it this way versus school as defined in X, Y, and Z. Could you maybe just address that?
Through the chair, Senator Guess and Senator Huggins, yes, that's true. The reason being is that the very specific exemptions for religious and private schools within the existing statutes, the one noticed in the memo is 1445-100. Ms. Michelle in her memo described it as not expressly necessary, that the bill right now does not apply to private schools. And the concern was that she raised that it may be argued, and forgive me if I'm the members, this is page 2, the first paragraph, the end of the first paragraph. It may be argued that under the police powers of the state that all private schools, whether in compliance with 1445-100 to 300 or not, may be regulated for the benefit of the health, safety, and welfare of the students and staff. The concern being is that there could be an argument made that since this is related to the health, safety, and welfare of students, you could, through the police powers, require a private school to do this. And the sponsor's discussion was that was one step farther than he was intending to go with this bill, is to get into private schools.
There is an, under 1445-100, very carefully, a religious or other private school that it complies with AS 1445-100 through 130 is exempt from other provisions of law and regulations relating to education, except law and regulations relating to physical health, fire safety, sanitation, immunization, and physical examinations. Now, I would assume that nothing in this statute is intended to have any effect on the exemption contained for public private schools contained within 1445-100. And I don't know if it's necessary for us to state that as an amendment to the bill, that nothing in this section is intended to affect the exemption for religious or other private schools as contained in 1445-100 or not. But I don't have any problem putting in there conceptually and seeing whether the drafter and our legal people believe that that exemption or that statement would be necessary or if it's just unnecessarily redundant. Department of Law, what would you think if you were looking at it?
And he's not.
You're smart.
Mr. Chair, I think we might be doing that by defining public.
I think we are too.
I think that's probably
a public.
A public, and so therefore it doesn't go to that.
I think it's very clear on the record, though, that our intent is not to affect the exempt status of public or religious schools. Is that correct? Does anybody object to that, Senator Terrio?
Mr. Chairman, I remember that debate, and it was long and ugly.
Yeah.
I think if we just ask the drafters for a memo clarifying that so that it's in the history of the bill. If they say, no, you might need a clarifying amendment, and the staff can advise us, right, so we can take that step.
Okay. Senator Huggins?
Right. One further comment. I wasn't part of that debate. My question is whether it's worth our time to check with the private schools that they might want this language. I have no idea. I've never been involved in this sort of debate before.
There's nothing in there that would restrict them. And this would, in effect, make them implement a policy that today they don't have to follow.
Well, I don't know. The way you read this, it sounded to me like they may have to follow it.
Well, in terms of physical health, you mean?
Right. It sounded to me like you may have to follow it.
Mr. Chair, it seems like that's the reason for the amendment, to clarify that, because I would agree with Senator Huggins that from what you read, I think it's questionable.
They do have to follow it. It could say
that. I don't know that we can exempt them from it if it's in the public health piece.
And I don't, if it is a matter of public health, then right now what I'm hearing right now is that public schools don't have to follow the procedure, that they can already allow children to carry the necessary medications that we're talking about here. And there's been no question under law. So if, under law, private schools have been exempt from the requirement to have the school nurse or administrator keep those medications, I don't know if that's a state law or whether that's a policy.
School policy.
But we're saying that under state law now, children are authorized and can do this. And if the parents and the child meet these steps, the school cannot preclude them from doing that. Now, the question is then, based on the, as we're all kind of seeing here, on terms of physical health, does that exemption go away here for private schools and they have to follow this procedure?
If I may offer a bit of clarification again from Jean Michel for Senator Huggins. Absent an amendment to the bill to expressly apply the self-administration of medication procedures to private schools, it is doubtful that a court would apply the provision to private schools either for voluntary or mandatory compliance. And part of the reason being is that even if a court found that HB 85's procedure relates to physical health under AS 1445-100, the exemption only requires compliance when the school elects to meet other standards under 45-100-300. There are several other issues that the school has to meet to get into that exception.
Mr. Chair, if I might, I have no intention, and the last thing I want to do is try to gain control of the private schools. I mean, I respect and celebrate that system. But in the same token, if they wanted, this sort of coverage, and I just say it might be worth asking that question of them.
Sure. Okay. So that's on the record that it's not our intent to force private schools to follow this same procedure.
One way or the other.
Is there any other question on the bill? We have an amended bill before us. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair, I think there's no, we still have the
We haven't adopted this. It is now before you. Is there objection to amendment number 5? Hearing none, amendment number 5 is adopted. You have now before you amended bill, CS for House bill number 85. What is the committee's will on this bill?
Mr. Chair, and
Senator Guest.
I would like to hear from this sponsor. This is the last committee of referral, and we made a lot of conceptual amendments, and there's not another place if there's an oops on whether or not the sponsor would mind until we actually get something written in front of us.
We have plenty of time. If we get this put together in a CS form and bring it back to the committee.
Thank you.
If there's no objection to that, that's our course of action. Thank you very much for your good work today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Let's go on next to House Bill 88.
Another bill entirely.
That's all right. I just
didn't even hear what you were talking about.
She does criminal law.
Annie, we just really appreciate your analytical mind.
I would have loved to have heard it, but I was.
Okay, we're still on the record with these comments, but let's go on to the next bill, House Bill 88. We have with us, who's going to do the initial presentation? Ms. Carpinetti, welcome to the Judiciary Committee again.
Thank you very much, sir.
Coming by to see us quite frequently, And if you'll go right ahead, we're eager to hear your presentation.
Thank you. My name is Annie Carpinetti. I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law, and we appreciate the opportunity to describe to you House Bill 88. The bill was originally drafted and introduced by the administration to respond to the problems of violence in our schools and also violence among juveniles relating to guns. The bill has changed a little bit since it was introduced, but the heart of it still remains an aggravating factor for a person who commits a crime against a person, and now arson, on school grounds, and directed against a person on school grounds, on a school bus, at a school-sponsored event, or in the administrative offices of a school district. The bill also provides that for juveniles who are 16 or 17 years old who use weapons, guns, in certain circumstances, that they would be automatically waived to adult court. Those circumstances are using a gun during a drug felony crime, or shooting a gun out of a car during a drive-by shooting under circumstances which manifest, it's hard to imagine a drive-by shooting not manifesting it, but under circumstances manifesting substantial and unjustifiable risk of physical harm to a person. It also, along the way, has there was added an amendment to a current mitigating factor in our sentencing laws, which provide that the court may mitigate a sentence for a defendant who has cooperated with the authorities in the prosecution of the case. It was amended to limit that mitigating factor to that particular offense for which the person is being sentenced for. We've had some a case out of Ketchikan where a court mitigated a sentence in a case for a cooperation 10 years before in an entirely unrelated matter. And it also has been amended to change our definition of recreation or youth center in our drug crimes. Certain offenses, third degree and fourth degree drug offenses, provide that it's an elevated offense to possess illegal drugs within a certain distance of a recreation or youth center. This and right, our current law provides that a youth center is one run by the municipality or the state. This adds those youth or recreational centers that are operated by private groups, and this was specifically, I think, Covenant House in Anchorage has a problem, and they wanted to make sure that drugs aren't distributed in within their area, and so they wanted to be included in the definition of recreation or youth center. I will say, and I apologize for this, I don't know where this happened along the way, but the aggravating factor found in Section 3 of the bill, it's on page 2, line 8, and I'm not sure exactly how this happened because I haven't been appearing on this bill throughout its history, but it makes the aggravating factor apply to arson, 1146-400. But the aggravating factor, and that's common, we often group crimes against a person and arson because of their serious nature and the potential harm against a person, but it's not a crime against a person. So what you would need to do if you wanted to leave arson in as a crime, conviction of which would result in an aggravating factor, you would need to amend it to include a building on school grounds, or you would need to take arson out. And that's really a policy call. It makes sense that, you know, arson against a school building should be considered, but it's up to you. I just wanted to bring that up to you. Thank you. And Ms. Ware has information that will help you too.
For the record, Patty Ware, Director of the Division of Juvenile Justice. I'm here primarily to answer questions. If members of the committee have any related to the sections of the bill that impact the juvenile system, I think Ms. Carpinetti has already summarized that this adds some offenses for juveniles age 16 or older in terms of their being processed and prosecuted as adults versus in the juvenile system. So if there are any questions related to that section, then I'm ready to answer those.
This bill has some, sounds strangely familiar.
We passed Senate Bill 65.
Senate Bill 65.
The most recent version is the Senate CS, Judiciary CS.
I thought we did a
good job. We did a lot of work on this bill once before. Someone saying that we didn't do a good enough job and they're bringing it back to us again?
I think you did too.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Terrio.
Can I start the process? I
move,
please. Move that we strike Section 1.
Wait a minute. Is there objection to striking Section 1 as Amendment Number 1? Hearing none, Section 1 is struck from the bill.
And Mr. Chairman, a lot of the
amazingly consistent, Senator.
I try to be. A lot of the debate that we had that I was involved in refers to or impacts page 2 of line 11. Administrative offices of the school district, and we had quite a bit of debate about we want the aggravator when it's a school property because there's kids, a school bus because there's kids. But then you get to office buildings where the district has their administrative offices. Sometimes it's a standalone building. Sometimes they're just renting space in a strip mall. You know, it could be a variety of things. And we had language that said, limited it to where children were being educated. So if it's a premises where kids are, you know, constantly present, that's when we gave that. So I'd like to move that on line 11.
Page 2?
Page 2, line 11. After the word this.
Do we have a copy of Senate Bill 65? Perhaps we could.
Let's
take a short recess and let's get copies of what we did before. And we now have before us the current path of CS for Senate Bill number 65, Judiciary, which was forwarded to the Finance Department on February the 9th. So I do remember that we worked on this, Finance Committee. So
you weren't even here.
Yeah, you weren't even here.
Little baby hadn't even been born yet. Look how far we are. She's almost ready to walk.
That's why we were able to get through it so quickly.
I think so.
But we did a lot of work on Senate Bill 65, and the House has done a lot of work on House Bill 88. And we have a
House version.
Let's discuss the differences. Senator French, you off the record during the break, you had a couple comments. Would you mind reiterating those for the record?
I did. On page 3, Mr. Chairman, in the automatic waiver provision of the bill, I reviewed the discussion. It must have been in the minutes or somewhere in the House side of what they were aiming at with their version of the automatic waiver offense versus our version. And one concern that came up in the House side was that the way it was proposed, and I don't know if it was proposed exactly like how we passed it, but in any event, the version that was proposed in the House would have allowed a juvenile who shot at a road sign from a vehicle to be waived automatically into adult court. And while I think most of us would agree that it's wrong to do that and it's worthy of punishment in some form, it may not rise to the level of an automatic waiver offense. And so I think the House was careful to focus their attention on incidents that, as Ms. Carpinetti explained, either involve using a gun during a drug offense, which is adult conduct from my view, and using a firearm discharged under circumstances that manifest substantial and justifiable risk of physical injury to a person, which is also adult conduct in my view, and both worthy of putting a young person in adult court.
Shooting at a road sign where there was no substantial or unjustifiable risk of physical injury to a person would not be a waivable offense?
Under the version that's in front of us, and I tend to agree with it.
Ms. Carpinetti?
What I think it makes sense the way they've the House version parsed out. It's I think it would be very rare that shooting a gun from a car would not cause substantial and unjustifiable risk of harm to a person, at least even the person who's shooting. But under the circumstances that you describe, we don't have any objection to that change.
Okay. Other comments on the differences between the bills?
Chairman, I
Senator Terrio.
Like to go back and just touch on that issue of the administrative offices, the restriction that we placed on it, that it applied in those locations where kids are being educated or kids are present or course of the daily activity that takes place there. So we're not offering this heightened level of protection for a school office building, and that's all it is, just office building, you know, where they've got the files and you know, some other office that might be across the hall or across the street. The reason for the extra protection is because of the presence of kids.
Other comments, Senator French?
Well, I just think if we're thinking about amending, it looks like the House bill is the more likely vehicle for the passage of this law, just the way things are. So it'd be my suggestion that we take our Section 1 in SB 65 and essentially substitute it for their Section 3 in HB 88, because I think we did a much better job.
The only question is, the difference is this issue of the arson. In their Section 3, they've added 1146-400. However, we had some testimony that that's somewhat problematic.
Well, it would be fixed by that amendment because the Senate version
It's not restricted to school buildings.
So do we want to delete arson, basically?
Or do we want to confine it to arson against school buildings on school property? That's the question.
It's a problem in my community.
At this point,
we keep getting playgrounds torched.
The way I read that, and tell me if I'm wrong, is it's just arson no matter where it's committed?
Well, it's not clear.
It couldn't be used.
If you're going to leave arson, which makes certainly makes sense on school buildings, to limit to buildings on school grounds or school buses. And that could be done easily.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator French.
I think they had a good impulse. They just didn't quite carry the ball all the way through. So I guess I'd go back to our Section 1. And the First Amendment would be to strike their Section 3 and insert our Section 1. So let me move that as an amendment.
We start there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Amendment number 1 would be, excuse me. Amendment number 2. Thank you, Madam Clerk, for keeping me straight.
Right.
I depend on you. Amendment number 2 would be to insert in place of section number 3 in this bill, Section number 1 in the current version, which is the Yankee version of CS for Senate Bill number 65, Section 1 from that bill. Is there objection? Hearing none. That's done.
Mr. Chairman, I would then propose as amendment number 3, and I'll just sort of try this conceptually and we can refine it as I go, but the idea is to add arson, and that would be adding the words or 1146-400, and then you'd have to say something along the lines of, and the defendant directed the conduct constituting defense against a person, and go all the way through the end of that down to, in our version, says at that office or a school building, and I guess my question would be whether that would cover a playground or school, maybe a school facility is the better phrase. So you direct the conduct either against, and the offense occurred on school grounds, Oh, I see. It's a violation. Yeah.
I think what we need to do there, Senator French, if we talk about the arson was directed at...
Well, actually, I think
our version, you don't need to. Yeah.
You add arson to the Senate version, it works.
If you add it to, because the offense occurred on school grounds.
Wait a minute, just for the clerk, let's kind of slow down here.
Group thought, yeah.
All right. Let's take a look at it. Our version says...
If you added after 1141, you added or AS 1146-400.
Okay.
And the offense occurred on school grounds, on a school bus, at a school's got. Okay.
I think that's correct.
So your amendment number 3, Senator French, would be to add after AS on the new amended version in section 1 that we've transferred over. The offense is a violation of AS 1141, then add or AS 1146-400. Is that correct?
That's it. That's my amendment.
And that takes care of it.
Is there objection to that amendment? Hearing none, amendment number 3 is adopted. Now, question. There is an amendment in their bill which says where they've added the definition of a recreation or youth center. Their section number 2. Is there any reason why we would want to address that section, or just leave it as it is?
Leave it as it is.
Okay.
Fine.
Okay.
Which other interest makes sense?
Okay.
I guess while we're going through the bill, if I may, Mr. Chairman, just ask the Department of Law their view of the House bill, section 4, the mitigator.
The department supports the amendment to the mitigator, yes.
That was in section what?
4 of their bill.
Okay. Other comments on the bill, Senator French?
I don't know whether what we've done means a title change, just because of the way it's phrased, there's some phraseology in there regarding aggravating factors for offenses that occurred. I think it's the same. Or administrative offices. We've kept that in. We just restrict it to those administrative offices where children are educated.
I think that would still fit.
That would be.
It's not more inclusive. It's less inclusive. So I think it fits without a problem. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Terrio.
On page 3, line 14. They have misconduct involving weapons in the first degree. That's 1161-190. We also, in our bill, we had it so that it also covered 1161-195, which is misconduct involving weapons in the second degree. Ours was the taking of the weapon on. Theirs is restricted to the use of the weapon on. So I'm wondering if Ms. Carpinetti has some comments with regard to that narrowing.
Well, the bill we originally supported included both first and second degree of misconduct involving weapons. The House took out the second degree. That conduct covers the following behavior: possession of a firearm during an illegal drug felony, or possessing a firearm after having been adjudicated or convicted of a felony, possessing a concealable firearm on a school ground. So that would not be covered under the House version. And it also covers behavior with reckless discharging a firearm at or in the direction of a building with reckless disregard for risk of physical injury to a person, or a dwelling. So you would not be under the House version, they decided not to waive conduct by juveniles 16 and 17 into adult court for that behavior. And we originally had requested that that be part of the waiver.
Senator Terrio?
So did you, were you persuaded by them? Did you agree to that less narrowing of this?
Well, I think we spoke against it, but there was a vote that we lost.
What was their thinking?
If I may, through the chair, Senator Terrio, I think the thinking had to do with what Senator French was mentioning earlier, the decision to waive juveniles into adult court and the discussion centered around the seriousness of second degree versus first degree and possession versus actually using a gun during a crime. In terms of the numbers, and that may or may not help the committee to make the decision, in a two-year period, the Division of Juvenile Justice had, when we're talking about kids 16 or 17, which is the subject matter here, we had, 16 kids charged with both misconduct involving weapons, first degree and second degree. So under the version where there's a narrowing, in a two-year period, we would have waived five juveniles into the adult system, approximately three kids a year. If, in fact, you decide to stay with the broader definition and include misconduct involving weapons second, then we're talking about 16 kids, approximately eight a year. Some of those for first degree and some of those for second degree. So that's really... Sorry, am I?
I just need to hear that again,
Senator French.
I thought I was tracking with you. It sounds like it's if we include both, there's going to be 16 in 2 years or eight per year. Right. If we narrow it to first degree, it's going to be 10 or five per year.
There were five juveniles charged with misconduct involving weapons first over a two-year period. So it'll be roughly three a year if you stick with just the first degree. And you are correct on the, if you decide to go with first degree and second degree.
Senator Gass.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you remind me if you have the discretion to waive, though, even if we don't automatically waive, if there's a second degree case that you think should be waived, you still have the discretion to waive that into adult?
Through the chair, Senator Gass, that's correct. Under existing statute, any offense that is deemed serious enough, we can get with the district attorney's office and petition the court for a waiver of that young person to the adult system.
So this is just strictly automatic waiver.
And I should say that the argument on the other side, I mean, we propose the waiver for first and second degree. The argument on the other side is that automatic waiver is, you know, is a serious step, and possibly it would be best to start with the first degree, which is a Class A felony, and then look at the second degree in another time. I think that was part of the debate in House Judiciary.
Senator Terrio?
I think with that discussion, I'm okay with the narrower scope.
Is the rest of the committee okay with that?
Still looking for ways to improve my dismal NRA rating, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I can give you some suggestions, Senator French.
I think we're on one.
We'll have another bill shortly that'll help you.
Mr. Chairman, one other.
Senator Terrio.
A new subject on page 2, lines 5 through 6. Operated by a private organized license, provide shelter training or guidance for minors. I'm wondering how inclusive that is.
Sections could be churches, could be boys and girls.
Of the House bills, of the House bill, yes. On page 2, lines 5 and 6, my son after school goes to the athletic club, participates on a swim team there, but there are some kids, and so that's a function of the club. They allow the swim team. But some kids go in the little cafe at the athletic club. They do their homework and wait for their kids, their parents to pick them up 2 hours later. So they're, in effect, going to the athletic club sort of like an aftercare program. Mm-hmm. So would that facility be swept in here?
Through the chair, Senator Terry, let me take a stab at that. I think one of the key words in this section is the word licensed. And so the Department of Health and Social Services licenses an array of facilities for shelter services for kids. I think the words training and guidance are, in fact, somewhat broad. But in the example that you gave, unless Annie disagrees with me, I do not believe that would be covered, because the Health and Social Services does not license that facility for purposes of caring for young people in any manner.
And so the Boys and Girls Club would not fall under that?
Through the chair, Senator Terry, we also do not license Boys and Girls Clubs. Now, I guess the question before the committee, and I don't have an answer for this, I'm thinking that, again, it would be no with regard to Health and Social Services, but would the word license include any kind of, you know, safety, fire license, those kinds of things that are issued by local governments, as opposed to licensed for purposes of caring for young people? I don't think that was the intention of this change.
It says licensed to provide shelter training guidance, and so I think it'd be read in toto.
Mr. Chairman, so it would be places like Covenant House here in town. It would include places like Juno Youth Services, which has both long-term treatment for kids and short-term shelter care. Family Focus in Fairbanks would be another example.
Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Gass? Senator Terrio.
Okay, but the language of the existing statute there at the top of page 2, recreation or youth center means a building or structure, athletic playing field or playground under A, run or created by a municipality or state to provide athletic, recreational, or leisure activities for minors.
That's existing.
Now that's existing language.
It's a government facility. State or municipality.
Right. Ben Boki, my community, you know, that.
So it could office. Include, it could include, for an example, in Fairbanks, the Carlson Center, but not the athletic club. Let's do this. Let's get a clean version of this thing, the way we've amended it, and we'll bring it back and take a look at it in the meantime. And we'll have cleaned up both of these and put Mr. Hove to work and hope that we can, and I'll give it a little thought and give us some time. We'll bring it back as we can. Tomorrow, today's Friday, we're going to recess today, shooting at, if we can, 4 o'clock in the afternoon for bills previously heard, Senate Bill 74, Senate Bill 20. And
4 o'clock
tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah, 4 o'clock.
This bill too?
Here. Is that correct, Mr. Ho?
Yes.
And that should give us time to get through the floor session tomorrow, have a cup of coffee, and get back over here to see if we can move a couple of these. And then we'll get these two bills.
Senator Carroll heard.
Are we having a floor session tomorrow?
I don't know. Are we or not? I heard we were, but maybe not.
I'm hoping.
I'm not part of the leadership. I don't know what they're doing for sure, but I will tell you, let's shoot for 4 o'clock, or we can make it subject to the call of the chair if we can meet earlier, and we'll let you know if we're going to do it earlier, if you leave some cell phone numbers or something with our staff. And we'll leave it subject to the call. We're at the moment indicating it'll be at 4 o'clock. It may be earlier than that if we can.
Mr. Chairman, do you mean this bill may be coming up?
No, not this bill. Yeah, those two that I just said, 74 and 20. And then we'll get these back on the schedule here. So thank you very much for your help with that. This meeting is recessed, subject to the call of the chair.
Yeah, I'm going to still log.